Welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. This is Street Knowledge. I'm Chris Graham, joined by AFP digital editor Crystal Graham. And Crystal, it's been a while since we've had you on the show. And hey, welcome and great seeing you. And boy, you look so bright today.
Well, we're getting close to Christmas, right? Next week. So yeah, I'm decked out in Buffalo plaid today. And I noticed you're decked out in a jersey there from a former UVA player, Kyle Guy.
He's been playing a lot for the Sacramento Kings in the preseason. They finished their preseason last night. Regular season starts next Wednesday. And, you know, a lot of us who, you know, rooted for Kyle when he was at UVA are rooting for him now to get a full-time gig in the NBA. He played some in the NBA last year, mostly in the G League with the Stockton Kings, the Sacramento Kings G League affiliate. And boy, he had 20 points the other night. He had he played pretty well last night. Didn't put up the big numbers, but got a lot of playing time, including a good bit of playing time with the starters in that game with the Golden State Warriors. So yeah, Kyle, rooting for Kyle, rooting for all the guys out there. Got a Malcolm Brogdon jersey hanging over my shoulder here. You can kind of see. We have more on the way. NBA season starting up here pretty soon.
Definitely. And we're going to talk sports in just a minute. I thought we'd first start with news, Chris, and then hopefully people will stay tuned with us throughout the show as we talk UVA basketball and Virginia Tech football. So stay tuned if you're interested in those things. This wasn't an announced podcast, but we were hoping that you might tune in. There's been a lot of news breaking over the last few days, and we just thought it might be good to do an update with people who read Augusta Free Press. So I thought we'd start, Chris, with COVID-19. Of course, that's on everyone's minds right now. The Virginia Department of Health got news late yesterday that their first doses of the COVID-19 vaccine will actually be less than initially planned, at least for a little while. Thought maybe you could give an update on that news and also how the vaccine is going to be distributed first in Virginia.
Yeah, the news is that around 100,000 less vaccines for Virginia in this first round. It's right around 110,000 less. And when I say this first round, really through the end of the month, the end of December, 370,000 doses will be shipped to Virginia. There had been the original projection was 480,000 doses. Now that said, Virginia has also placed an order for 146,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine, which, when it's approved by the FDA, will begin arriving the week of December 21st, which is basically Monday, so next week. So, you know, the vaccines are coming in. The priority schedule is out, and as expected, Virginia falling in line with much of the rest of the country. CDC guidelines calling for residents in long-term care facilities and healthcare workers to be first in line to get the vaccine. And that's the standards adopted by Virginia as well. So, and we also know, I mean, here locally, Augusta Health has been one of the centers across the state, hospital centers across the state to get the vaccine. Augusta Health is uniquely positioned. It has the capability on site to be able to, especially with the Pfizer vaccine, it needs to be kept at unnaturally low temperatures. I think negative 70 Fahrenheit and below temperatures. And Augusta Health has the ability to keep that vaccine at that temperature on site. So that's why Augusta Health's a hub sort of for the region. But yeah, it's getting out. I mean, we've got stories on our website about, there was Augusta Health sent some photos of folks there getting the vaccine, their healthcare workers getting the vaccine this week. And we know we're seeing that across the state and across the country. So the vaccine is getting out. That's great news for everybody.
So Chris, frontline workers, obviously long-term care facilities, first on the list to get the COVID vaccine, makes total sense. One group of people that isn't on the list though are, it seems like, jails and correctional centers. You had a story earlier this week, you actually broke this story, that there was an outbreak at the Augusta Correctional Center in Craigsville. Apparently between the employees and the inmates, there's been a large number of people testing positive. I thought maybe you could update that story, the new numbers that are just in on that. And then of course, maybe briefly discuss the fact, I know some family members have been reaching out to you, and there is some concern that there's a large number of people there and that they're not on the top priority list as far as the vaccine is concerned.
I wanted to clarify that. They're not on the top priority list. They are on the list. Everybody's on the list eventually. We're probably towards the bottom of the list, you and I personally, Crystal. We don't have pre-existing conditions. We're relatively young. And so, you know, we're a little bit down the list. But no, at the Augusta Correctional Center, we jumped into this story last week when the reporting was, I think originally the original reports, maybe it was last Friday, around 50 or 60 cases there, 50 or 60 positive tests there. Now 332 inmates, 65 staff members. That's almost 400, 397. And I'm looking at the page right now to make sure that there's no update. And there is no update from yesterday yet in terms of additional testing. From what I've been told by family members who've been in contact with their loved ones on the inside, there's apparently more testing being done today. I don't know if you'd get those results today. I didn't presume you wouldn't get those results today. But no, what sounds like a harrowing situation there, it's a facility that I think has capacity for 1,300. I've looked that up, and it's, you know, hard to get a sense of exactly how many people are there right now. But you've got that would, if that number is accurate and the number of inmates currently testing positive is accurate, you're talking about like about a fourth of the inmate population there would be testing positive. And what we've been told by the family members who've been in contact with their loved ones there, you know, sons or husbands, fiancés, brothers, whatever the case may be, who are there, they're being told that this started, you know, Augusta Correctional Center did not have a COVID case until this outbreak. I mean, you're talking about almost 9 months of no cases. I mean, they were a model that was being held up by the Virginia Department of Corrections for how well they had done. And what we're being told, though, and in fact, I've had a contact with a family member of a staff person there that I'll be writing about later today that sort of corroborates what the inmate families have been saying. Essentially, it's just lack of staff. You know, poor staffing led to there was a shakedown, I guess, that was initiated about a month ago that a lot of folks seem to think was the genesis of this outbreak. Folks were brought in from the outside, employees that is, were brought in from the outside to help with this shakedown, this lockdown of the facility. And apparently, from at least what the inmates are telling their family members who are then telling us, the feeling is that there were at least a couple of COVID positives among those staffers who were brought in from the outside to assist in this lockdown. And then that's how it all spread. So you go from a model situation at Augusta Correctional Center to just a harrowing situation where now I'm told as of this morning by another family member that the facility is back on lockdown. Food is in a weird place. You know, those with dietary restrictions are not getting the food that they would normally get. Showers, hygiene is an issue. Access to showers and hygiene, access to even just being able to communicate with family members for a lot of folks has been taken away. So it is a situation that's pretty scary. And we've been following it for the last week. We'll continue to follow it. And hopefully until, I'd love to hear from the Department of Corrections. We've reached out a couple of times. We got a very kind of standard statement from them that really didn't address the questions we asked. I'd love to see, I don't care if they answer us. I just want them to answer the situation and resolve what's going on there now.
So you can continue to follow that story on AugustaFreePress.com. Chris has probably already written half a dozen stories or more on the Augusta Correctional Center and the situation there. And as he said, another story coming up later today once he has the opportunity to write about that. So definitely do that. And anything you can do to try to encourage. I think I saw that there was actually going to be a protest of some kind about the conditions there being held as well. Of course, there were some people sharing it on social media, and then they were saying, but you know, we're not supposed to gather in groups of more than 10. So, you know, it's a tough time to protest right now. But so I thought I'd mention that as well.
That didn't stop folks back in May and June. And I would say that, protests do what they do. This time of year, the hard part of a protest is it's cold and that kind of thing. But, you know, I mean, it raised the attention. And I want to thank all the family members out there who've mm-hmm. been in contact with us. We're doing our part. I mean, we just want to, we know that, you know, certain people read our website on a regular basis, folks in Richmond do. And so we're hopeful. I mean, you know, we're just hopeful that the continued attention will help resolve the situation. It's just tragic. I mean, you know, and then there are people out there, you know, you see these comments, well, they're prisoners. I mean, and it's a medium security prison. There's some people there who've done some interesting things. But as family member after family members pointed out, yeah, these guys committed crimes. Yeah, they were convicted for crimes. They weren't sentenced to death. Mm-hmm. And they don't deserve to be treated like animals. And so, you know, we've got to do the most we can for the least in our society. And right now they're being treated like they're just thrown away. And it's a horrible situation.
I'll mention just that protest that I mentioned, I just shared that link in the thread. So if you're watching this on Facebook or even listening to this later, you can go to the Facebook page and see that it's actually taking place at the Middle River Regional Jail, but it is to protest the treatment of inmates throughout Virginia. And basically the fact that they're not being protected during this pandemic. It's tomorrow at 10 a.m. There at the Middle River Regional Jail, expected to last about 2 hours.
We didn't talk about that, but I mean, I'll quickly go over, there's a bigger number there. We've been reporting on this the last few weeks too. This dates back, I think the first reports of this were about middle of November. 470 folks there, 401 inmates, 69 staff have tested positive for COVID there. And that is a place. I mean, you know, Craigsville, the Augusta Correctional Center in Craigsville is remote for anybody. It's on the other side of the world for lots of people. But yeah, if you want to get your attention, if you want to get your voices heard, the Middle River Regional Jail is right there. It's in a central location, and that might help. But yeah, so there's two outbreaks here in our region, one in the regional jail and then one in that medium security prison out in the western part of our county. And it's two different entities. You know, the Department of Corrections runs the prison. The regional jail actually is a local. It's run by a local jail authority. But I think that more people need to take on the responsibility of helping get the word out and get these situations corrected.
Right, exactly. So yeah, definitely did share that link, and I'll try to post it to the main Facebook page as well for anyone that might be interested in participating in that. Chris, the other story that you wrote about related to COVID, and then we're going to shift gears a little bit to some other news, was related to a study that was actually led by Virginia Commonwealth University. And that study said the people maybe are a little bit unsure about whether or not to take the vaccine. Can you give a little bit more details about what VCU released regarding that study?
Yeah, it's a study. It was a survey. And, you know, on the one question, almost 60% of respondents said they definitely plan or probably plan to take a future vaccine. You know, they'll take it eventually. But there's also a similar number, 55-ish%, who say they're a little worried about taking it right now. Like they're people want to take it eventually, but right now there's concerns. And, you know, this is an interesting thing. I mean, I think this could be a factor of the media hype and certain people in politics hype who for months President Trump for months said there'll be a vaccine by the end of the year and we'll get everything solved here. And quite a few people took up the other side of this saying, there's no way we'll have a vaccine. There's no way it'll be safe. I think they said that for political reasons, but now you got people who they're listening. I mean, that's the responsibility or lack thereof, I think, of people in positions of responsibility. When you say something repeatedly, it's hard to take it back. And so you have people thinking, well, I mean, is it safe to take it right now? Or let's let other people take it first and find out. And I think that's what the issue is. I think as it gets normalized, as we see, you know, and I think Vice President Pence and his wife got their vaccine shots on live TV. I saw a picture of Governor Northam getting his vaccine shot. As you see people do that, as we get a couple of weeks of these pictures and stories and we start realizing, hey, you know, it's okay. I mean, you know, nobody's, you know, being adversely affected by this, then people will start realizing. And plus, I mean, honestly, it's not like, Crystal, I mentioned this earlier, we're not in line for it right away because we're way down the list. So, you know, right now it's the scarcity is more the concern than whether or not people are going to just not take the vaccine. I think by the time the bulk of people have a chance to take the vaccine. It'll have been proven safe enough to do so. But yeah, right now there are people who are saying, I think that, again, I just think they're repeating what they were told by those in positions of authority for months. That's why we got to be careful with our messaging, I think.
Well, and I think too, it's just that people feel like maybe this was rushed, which isn't really the case at all. When you consider that, you know, Chris, you had just read a story recently that said they really had the cure, the vaccine, so to speak, for this within a few days of, you know, of it coming to the United States. It's just a matter of, you have to go through all the testing to make sure that it is safe and to get that FDA approval before it's mass distributed. We have a friend who's from Australia, and I know she said, well, how do I sign up to get this vaccine? You know, and the point is you don't, you know. It's kind of like you've really got to wait at this point until your group is called for the vaccine. And we don't exactly know how all that's going to play out yet. We know right now that unless you're a frontline worker, most of those tests are being distributed at hospitals to hospital workers, or you've got some higher level, or you're in one of these independent living facilities that are handling it. Then you probably don't need to worry about it right now. In fact, I think there was even a story that said to beware of scams that are asking you to pay for it, to get in line and things of that nature, because there's always that person looking to make a little bit of money on something like this as well. So those are just things to keep in mind. Chris, anything you want to say kind of before we wrap up the COVID coverage today and kind of shift gears to some other news?
Yeah, I mean, just to say that, yeah, it's rolling out slowly, but there's so much going on that you don't even know is going on. Like, for example, I mentioned Virginia is going to get 100,000 less doses than they expected this month. Still, that's one for every 20 residents of Virginia that we're going to get. And that's just in the first month. You got to think about what goes into, I mean, if one out of every 20 Americans, and the numbers are going to be consistent there, that means that we're shipping out roughly, what would that be, one out of 20, about 16, 17 million doses in this first shipment in the first month. You know, there's a lot of work being done by the manufacturers, the pharmaceutical companies, even to the level of Corning having to, Corning is a company that's producing the vials for the vaccine. I mean, there's a lot that goes into this. And so it's rolling out. This is great news. Honestly, to me, the messaging should be simply take the vaccine. This is what gets us back to normal. I mean, it's not like when you take the vaccine, then you can just go out and, you know, like I use the phrase running naked on the beach. I mean, that's, you know, it's not going to be normal that second that you take the vaccine, but the more of us who take it, every day gets closer to not a new normal. And I think that's an important message here too. We're not talking about some new normal. We're talking about normal. Mm-hmm. And there are indications that if we continue at the pace we are with the rollout of the vaccine, people, you know, lining up, getting inoculated, we could be back to normal, not new normal, not wearing masks for the next 20 years, not being able to go to restaurants, not being able to go to concerts and basketball games. I'm talking about normal by May or June of this coming year. And so I know that for some people, they say, oh, come on, May or June, what are you talking about? It's December. Well, we've already been through 9 months of this. And every day, it's not like it's going to just, we're going to go from, you know, mask and social distancing to, you know, we're going to just push a button and it's going to go to normal right away. It's going to get more and more normal every day. So do the things you need to do. Social distancing, still engage in social distancing. Yeah, whatever you believe about masks, wear your mask. I don't care what your favorite study says, just do it. I mean, you know, just do these things. And then when it's your turn to take the vaccine.
Well, and my guess is, Chris, that numbers are dramatically going to go down in the state of Virginia once these, you know, nursing homes, long-term care facilities, these places where there are mass numbers of people and where there have been outbreaks. Once those people get the second dose of the vaccine, because really there's two doses. The first one, from what I read, is like 60, 70% effective, but it's not until you get that second dose that you really get up into that 90% effective range. But then the numbers in all the states throughout the United States should really start dropping. And that's when I think that restrictions will start to ease a little bit. And, you know, I have a friend who lives in Stanton who said, look, some people think I'm crazy because, you know, like I've really locked me and my family down. But, you know, the thing is, even as restrictions ease, what, you know, your decisions about you and your family are really going to be up to you as far as when you're comfortable getting life back to normal. there are some people who just, like you said, Chris, are ignoring it altogether. And I think at this phase, you're right. We're near the end of the tunnel. Let's just wear our masks. Let's social distance. Let's listen to the guidelines set forth by the state and by the CDC. And let's push through this and put this in the past. So, yes, you're right. We're on track. I think you're right. By the summer, things should start to be back to some, you know, some normal, you know, back to normal.
I'm not going to qualify and say some sense of normalcy. Right. I mean, our goal here should be normal.
Okay. So get back to normal.
I say that should be the messaging. I'm not the person saying this alone. There are healthy debates raging among public health folks on social media, folks that I follow and really kind of follow their line of thinking, that one failure of messaging would be, oh yeah, well, do all these things and still it's going to be, I mean, you know, for example, President-elect Biden saying that schools won't be able to open until the end of 100 days after his administration, when he takes the oath of office next month. I mean, that's May, you know, the school year would be over. That'd be a whole lost school year. I mean, I think that we need to take some steps in the right direction. And Crystal, you made a point. You said the numbers would go down. The death numbers certainly will go down even as we just go through this first phase. When you get the healthcare workers inoculated, that's great because that means, you know, you won't need to worry about then people who are working on the front lines in hospitals being exposed and then having to have workers go on furlough and that kind of thing. And then that hurts capacity, even if there aren't a lot of people in hospital beds, which fortunately our hospital capacities have been holding up really well here in Virginia and nationwide. But, you know, we need to have our workers taken care of. And then if we get the vaccines to those older folks, the most vulnerable, 89% of the deaths are over 60 years old. And so if we can get those death numbers down, the case numbers will still be there, but it's not the cases, it's hospitalizations and it's deaths, and the hospitalizations and deaths do tend to be more for the older folks. And so if we can get those numbers down, yeah, we can start moving back to some sense of normalcy relatively soon. And then we can get back to that regular normal, the old normal, you know, hopefully by the start of the summer.
Yeah. So Chris, I thought we'd look at some other news, but as we shift gears to look at some other stories that you've been covering, I thought I'd remind people that are tuning in live that, of course, you can ask questions as well. You know, if you go to our Facebook page and go to the main Augusta Free Press one, because I shared this on my personal page as well, and you're welcome to post a question there if there's something that you think that we can answer, because again, Chris does a deep dive into these numbers every single day, something that most of us don't have the opportunity to do. So if you have questions, even if it's going back to COVID, even though we're kind of moving on from that right now, I'm happy to ask those questions of Chris and at least get his take on your question. So feel free to do that now. Chris, I wanted to shift gears a little bit. There's been a story in this area for some time regarding Karen Kugler. She's a missing Augusta County woman. Some circumstances surrounding her death were so strange, just the fact that she kind of traveled to areas maybe that she didn't normally frequent before she went missing. A crash scene was found on the Blue Ridge Parkway earlier this month, and it seems that now the Augusta County Sheriff's Office has confirmed that, in fact, while they had already confirmed it was her vehicle, they have confirmed that her body was found, and it looks like funeral services and things like that are now underway for her. Any update that you can give on that story above and beyond what I've already said?
Yeah, the details are still emerging in this case. In fact, we got two press releases from the Sheriff's Office, Augusta County Sheriff's Office today. The first one said there'd be no additional information, and the second one said, okay, here's some more information. Karen Kugler was reported missing on October 23rd. She had not been in contact with family members at that time, we were told, for a couple of days. And so October 23rd, she's reported missing. You mentioned that her car was found. It was found December 6th off the Blue Ridge Parkway in Nelson County. And what's odd about, I mean, so, and then we get the press release today, we were told that, you know, at that time on December 6th, we were told no foul play suspected. And so we're still investigating. And then today we're told that, you know, at first no more information. And then we were sent an additional update, that, there were two new details. Her body was found outside the vehicle, which could be suspicious, might not be, who knows. We'll have to get more on that, I guess. And that the cause of death, according to the state medical examiner's office, is undetermined. So that's interesting too. And we're also told, we were told back on December 6th that it appeared that the accident had happened some time ago. No confirmation either then or today as to when it may have happened. That's important detail. But, you know, so in one sense, you could say open and shut case. She probably just drove from her home in Augusta County, went on the parkway and wrecked a car. That's could have been what happened. Except that, so on October 23rd, you know, we didn't have a lot of details. There were a couple of updates in the process that make us think that there was more to this story. On October 30th, we got a report from the sheriff's office that revealed that the last known contact with Cougar had been on October 22nd in Fishersville, approximately 3 a.m. And then it was also reported that her phone had been used on October 23rd at 4 a.m. near the Buckingham-Nelson County line. And what's interesting about that is that's way on the other side of Nelson County, because she was, her body was found, her car was found on the Blue Ridge Parkway in Nelson County. Buckingham County is on the other side of Nelson County. So that's, it's down 56, but it's not, so that something doesn't end up there. And then there was another report that on October 26th, she had been seen at the McDonald's in Dilwyn, which is more central Virginia towards Richmond. And that at that point, investigators were seeking to identify and contact the individual who reportedly bought breakfast for her at that Dilwyn McDonald's. And then there were a couple of updates after that where investigators, we were told that investigators had scoured the area of Fish Pond Road in Nelson County, her last known location, that there had been a waterborne search of the James River near Route 56 boat ramp at the James River. There's more to this, than that she just drove from Augusta County to the Blue Ridge Parkway and wrecked her car. There's, I don't know what it is to it, but there's more to it than that. And we'll continue to monitor the case for any developments.
In the meantime, there's some closure in that they have now identified her remains and her family can move on in that respect. But you're right, Chris, as far as the investigation goes, I think there's a lot of legs left of this story and there's still a lot of unknowns regarding how she ended up there on the Blue Ridge Parkway. So we'll continue to follow that story on Augusta Free Press. If for some reason you haven't read this news and you want to catch up on it, you can just do a search of her name there on Augusta Free Press, or I posted a link to Chris's most recent story on the thread there on Facebook as well. Now really shifting gears, Chris, some kind of interesting news. I've been hearing about this Christmas star for about a month now. People posting on Facebook, there's been a lot of things shared about it, but apparently people who are stargazers, like we have a neighbor here, Karen, who is a stargazer and I'm sure will be out, are gonna be in for quite a treat on December 21st. Do you wanna fill us in?
Yeah, it's called the Great Conjunction. And it's when the planets of Saturn and Jupiter line up in a manner that we on Earth find interesting. They don't line up. I mean, they're still, millions of miles apart in space as it is. But from our vantage point here on Earth, they are lined up for us to see in an interesting way. This is going to happen for us coinciding with the winter solstice on Monday, basically, right? So December 21st, coming Monday, 3 days from when we're doing this live. And what's interesting about this is, for those who are obviously Christians who are into the story of the birth of Jesus and Christmas, and of course we're a few days away, we're a week away from Christmas as we speak right now. This is called a Christmas star also, because it's not a star. It's two of our bigger planets in our solar system, our neighbors, that themselves give off a lot of light as stars in our sky, and they're going to be converging together, at least from our appearance, on this night on December 21st. This is the first time that we will have seen this alignment. We will have been able to see this alignment from Earth since the year 1226. This is something that doesn't happen that often. I think I'm putting that mildly when I say that. Almost 800 years. The last time that it would have been possible to see it was the year 1623, but it wasn't visible from Earth that year. Those two planets align in the solar system. So this is something that happens very, very rarely. And so, you know, when you start reading the accounts in the biblical annotations of how the three wise men saw a star and they decided to follow it and they found this little baby in a manger. I mean, this is what they found. This is what they saw, right? I mean, at least that's what the story, the person who those who told the story eventually got written down. This obviously happened during that period of time. So, yeah, it's going to be something. And it looks like from the weather forecast, at least
that's what I was just pulling up on my phone was that weather forecast.
I thought it looked good. Crystal, you got it on your phone. Does it look good for those of us here?
It looks promising, okay. For the 21st right now, there's a chance of some snow flurries, some snow showers even possible that day. Temperatures for that evening get down to 33, but it does say a few clouds. So we're going to keep our fingers crossed that it's a nice clear night and that people who are interested in seeing this, did you say since 1226, this Christmas star can get out and kind of take a look at that. So
if you miss it now, the next one isn't 800 years away because that wouldn't matter to you anyway. The next one is 60 years away, though. So I'm 48. I don't think I'll be 108.
Yeah, same.
And it's actually March 15th that year, too. So it wouldn't quite have the significance of December 21st, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's just, you know, we kind of put this in the context of news. You know, 2020 has sucked. It has royally just sucked. But, you know, maybe this is like some sign, right? Like let's take it as a sign from above that we're getting the Christmas star at the end of this awful year. And maybe that's like the step in the right direction for making 2021 a better year, right?
I can't tell you the number of people who are looking forward to ringing in the new year, you know, ready to throw 2020 out and ready to bring 2021 on. I've seen so many things on Facebook regarding that. So
well, what I'm saying is let's not even wait till December 31st. You got December 21st with this
10 days early
800 year star.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know, and it's the winter solstice. Let's take the natural year and bundle up and get out there and enjoy something that people on this planet have not been able to see in 800 years.
All right. Sounds like a plan, Chris. Okay. So we talked a little bit about Kyle Guy at the start of the podcast, and I promised that we would shift gears and that we would look at UVA basketball and Virginia Tech football. Since I mentioned Kyle Guy and just the awesome start he's having in the preseason, I can't wait to see what kind of playing time he gets for the Sacramento Kings. Even as a Virginia Tech graduate, of course, I've followed UVA basketball because of you in big part for many, many years, and he is one of my all-time favorites. I love the three-point shooter. I think I'm a lot like you in that regard. And so when he made that buzzer beater for 3 points to win the game the other night, wow, you know, it's so exciting to see. So I know you've been equally excited about UVA basketball this season. You know, that first game in particular, you were all hyped up that this season was going to be something special. You know, the team has kind of, due to COVID, we don't exactly have all the details yet as to what that has been, but they've kind of put the brakes on some big games, including going to New York to participate in the tournament that was scheduled for this month, but they have made up for it. Tuesday, they're going to play William and Mary, which you could have said, okay, they're going to put a bunch of cupcake type games on their schedule in the month of December, just so they're playing something before the, you know, before they get into ACC play. But Chris, that's not what they did. Fill our viewers in, fill our readers in on what's upcoming for Virginia basketball.
Yeah. Gonzaga.
Number one Gonzaga.
Yeah, they didn't mess around. You said this yesterday too, and I said they're number one, but they haven't been number one when it counted yet. And that's not a knock on Gonzaga. They've been a great program for a number of years. Mark Few and hasn't won a national championship yet. But yeah, that game is December 26th. Merry Christmas to all of us who are UVA basketball fans. It'll be in Fort Worth, Texas. You know, it'll be on TV, which is important. It was Saturday at 4:00 Eastern time tip off. It should be interesting. These two teams played in the NCAA tournament back in 2001. Gonzaga won that game. Roger Mason Jr. had a chance at the end to win the game for Virginia and missed a shot. Then they had a game in JPJ in 2007, and Virginia scored 60 points in the first half, won 108-87. This Virginia team is not going to score 108. The Gonzaga team likes to score as much as possible. They are one of the faster teams in all of college basketball, number 9 in adjusted tempo on KenPom.com. Virginia, number 357. There are 357 teams in college basketball. So Virginia's the slowest team in college basketball, which is they always are. The only reason the number changes is because there's more teams, but they've consistently been the slowest team in college basketball the last several years. So a clash of styles, which will be interesting to see. Lots of talent on the floor. You know, Virginia's ranked number 17 in the country right now because they lost that game to San Francisco back last month. But, I mean, these were two preseason top five teams. Virginia will be back there again. These are two of the top contenders for the national championship next spring. And they're playing on December 26th. So, Virginia gets a tune-up, if you want to call it, William & Mary. The way Virginia's played this year so far with all the newcomers, I don't want to say anything's a tune-up. And no disrespect to William & Mary in that sense, but at least that game is being played next Tuesday. I'll be there in JPJ, mask, social distancing, everything else on press row. And then they play Gonzaga, and then ACC play starts on December 30th with Notre Dame. So, yeah, excitement for Virginia fans. We've had to take a couple weeks off, but we're getting ramped back up here pretty soon.
Exciting for sports fans in general, but not only, especially those that love basketball, with the NBA gearing back up. We barely had a time to catch our breath from when the season ended to them starting back up. And now college football, well, there is some exciting college football coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that. But really, you know, the fact that college basketball is really ramping up for those who follow the ACC, the fact that ACC play will be starting here very soon as well. So that's exciting. Chris, I guess I should at least let you mention the fact that the ACC championship game is this weekend. Do you have any details on that?
Just that it's a heck of a game. It's number 2 Notre Dame, number 3 Clemson, a rematch of a game they played back in early November. Notre Dame won that one in double overtime in Notre Dame Stadium, but that was a game that Trevor Lawrence missed because of the whether it was a positive COVID test or a false positive, whatever the case may be. He was on the sideline. He just didn't get to play in the game. So that tells you something about how COVID positive he must have been. A rematch of this, and you know, from the ACC's perspective, the winner is going to get in the college football playoff. There's a 14 college football playoff, obviously, at the end of the season. The winner gets in. It's possible both get in. Notre Dame with the win over Clemson, if Notre Dame were to lose this game, but, you know, lose respectably, I think a case can be made that both these teams will be among that final four. Obviously the winner of this game gets in. So that's 4 o'clock kickoff from Charlotte. There will be 5,200 fans there, 1/7 of the capacity, which is a North Carolina rule. The game is being played there in Charlotte. I was at the ACC championship game last year, of course, because Virginia played Clemson in that game. NFL Stadium, Carolina Panthers home. I love Uptown Charlotte. Will miss being there this year. 4 o'clock kickoff there, and then 8 o'clock SEC championship game. There's time in between the two to recover, recuperate, whatever you got to do. And then the SEC championship game is Alabama and Florida, and a similar scenario there. Possibility that if Florida were to upset Alabama, they could sneak their way in. Alabama with a loss would probably still be in. So you could be watching the sort of a playoff preview if you tune in starting at 4 o'clock on Saturday.
Well, sounds like some exciting football and basketball, some things I need to pencil in on my calendar for the weekend, but a lot of fun. For those of you who stuck with us to the very end, I did say we would talk about Virginia Tech football, and I thought we would just close with that today, Chris. Some surprises out of the Virginia Tech program. There had been a lot of whispers, especially before Virginia Tech's last game against Virginia this season, that maybe head coach Justin Fuente was going to be on the chopping block, that there was some talk about buying out the rest of his contract. We heard some announcements, you know, that there was going to be a news conference the following day after the coach was to meet with the athletic director. And so there was some questions as to what the future of Virginia Tech football might look like. So I guess to some of us, it was a little bit of a surprise when we heard that that Virginia Tech had decided to retain Fuente. I thought maybe you could update people on what you found out about that situation and what you reported on as far as Fuente's future at Virginia Tech.
Yeah, I'm not going to say what I found out because I colored what I wrote last night and is on the front page of the website today. There's color to it because I think there's a lot of reading in between the lines that needs to be done as far as this goes, because publicly, you know, the answers we're getting from like Whit Babcock, the athletics director, are, hey, I'm committed to this guy and we're going to move forward. And, you know, there are people who say, well, maybe the cynics who are saying, well, it's just because Tech's athletics program is having money problems. Of course, everybody's having money problems in athletics because of the lack of fans at games largely. And Tech's no stranger to that. They announced a few weeks ago that they were facing a $15 million budget shortfall this year. They were asking coaches to take some voluntary pay reductions and they were implementing some other things. They're also trying to raise money to kind of close the gap, you know, sort of meet in the middle there. And a buyout for Fuente would have been $10 million. And so there are people saying, well, they're not going to write him a check for $10 million when they need $15 million to just, you know, break even. You know, I'll correct you on that. If that's your impression, you don't write a check for $10 million, wherever the buyout is. Most of these contracts in this day and age are paid monthly when you buy somebody out. And even then, if the coach gets another job, that counts against the buyout. So, I mean, there's a lot of wiggle room there. I don't think money had any decision, any part of this decision. I think really what this is Whit Babcock, this was his first prominent hire. It's his most important hire. Any athletics director for a Power Five college program in the United States, your most important job is to hire a football coach. And so, because even at schools like Virginia, which, you know, basketball makes a lot of money, football makes more. It just does. So the football coach is your most important hire. And Babcock's got a great record at the other sports. You know, he hired the baseball coach he hired away from Maryland. He hired Kenny Brooks away from JMU. I wanted Kenny Brooks for UVA for years, and UVA wouldn't entertain the notion. He goes to Virginia Tech. He's got Virginia Tech women playing great. They're one of the powers in the ACC now. He's hired two great basketball coaches. Buzz Williams got him to a Sweet 16. Mike Young might actually be better. The coach who replaced Buzz Williams. So Babcock's done a great job hiring other coaches. The football program is not doing great, and that's the program that runs everything else. And so, you know, Fuente in 5 years is 43-32. He's had two losing seasons in the last 3 years, including this year, 5-6. The recruiting is suffering. Recruiting is a function of your success in the field. It's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, and it's recruiting. His class last year ranked last in the ACC, and this year 10th out of 14 in the ACC. He's lost some key guys. Hendon Hooker this week, the starting quarterback, announcing he's going to enter the transfer portal. I mean, so, you know, there's a feeling among some that's kind of rats getting off the sinking ship. They're not recruiting great. No four stars in this year's recruiting class. And so, I mean, but that said, if you're Babcock, you've got to double down, because if you move on from Fuente, then the question is, you're the guy who hired him. I mean, you know, I've told this story many times, Crystal. You've heard me say it, and I've probably said it on a couple of podcasts, but, you know, Scott German and I were there for Frank Beamer's last game in Virginia. Frank Beamer, the legendary Virginia Tech coach, his last game physically played in the state of Virginia was in Charlottesville in 2015, and his Hokies won that game, came back from two fourth quarter deficits to tie the game and eventually win a last minute field goal. And, you know, Virginia class act that I think a lot of folks at UVA are, you know, the post game situation at Scott Stadium, and actually in most places in football, the home coach gets a big elaborate room with lots of chairs for the media, and the visiting coach gets a little side office that's no bigger than a broom closet in most cases. And you get a couple guys sitting around with notebooks asking that guy questions. Well, UVA gave the big room to Frank Beamer. It was his last game in Virginia. And, you know, it was a class act, I thought, on the part of Jim Daves and the staff there at UVA. And Frank Beamer was there. His wife, Cheryl, was there. Crystal, you and I had the opportunity at that year's ACC kickoff, that, you know, a few months before that, to have dinner with Frank and Cheryl Beamer. And I came away, I'm a lifelong Frank Beamer fan after that. He was such a generous person that day. that evening. And so, you know, I recognized his wife, and then instead of letting Frank Beamer talk, I mean, his wife Cheryl's in tears sitting beside Frank, you know, at the moment. Whit Babcock goes on for 5 minutes about how there were rumors that day that we've got a new coach and I'm not going to address those rumors. But it took him 5 minutes to say it. It was almost like he did a victory lap that day. Hey, I've got all the media here. Hey, Frank's sitting here. Hey, the new coach. That new coach hasn't worked out yet. If Whit Babcock has to fire him, maybe Whit Babcock himself needs to get fired. So I think that's what we're seeing here, Crystal. I think that if it doesn't work out next year, I think you see two guys looking for jobs. And I think that's where we are. I titled the column Ride or Die. I think that Babcock and Fuente are ride or dies right now.
Hey, you mentioned Frank Beamer, so I have to mention Shane Beamer. He seems to have quite an opportunity ahead of him. Do you have the news on that as well?
Oh, yeah. He was named the new head coach at South Carolina. SEC, big boy football. South Carolina has aspirations that are probably a little outsized for where they are. They've had some great runs in the last 15, 20 years. They had a run under Lou Holtz, the legendary Lou Holtz. Then they lured Steve Spurrier to Columbia. And Steve Spurrier had some nice seasons. And in fact, Shane Beamer was on staff. I'm pretty sure it was with Spurrier. He was a recruiting coordinator. He has a run there. He's not taking a job somewhere where he's never been before. He had a great run, Shane Beamer did. Then he went on. He's been the assistant head coach for offense at Oklahoma. Another great job. I mean, you know, Oklahoma's a perennial national championship contender. And so you got pedigree in the sense that he's Shane Beamer. He's coached under some great guys and at big time schools. South Carolina's a tough job, though. Their fan base expects to be Alabama. They expect to be Auburn. They expect to be LSU and Florida and Georgia. I've already named quite a few national powers who all expect to be national champions every year in that conference. And South Carolina is next tier from that. And so, I mean, Beamer's got an opportunity. They've got money there. They're not afraid to spend it. The NCAA tournament's first couple of rounds were for Virginia were down at the University of South Carolina a couple years ago, the year that Virginia won the national championship. And so Scott and I spent felt like a week there. and the parking for media was at the football stadium. And it's a palace. I mean, it's nice. And the area around it's nice. I mean, they know how to make money down there. It's an opportunity for Shane Beamer. No question about it. And, when I was thinking through last weekend, hey, what happens if Virginia Tech does cut the cord with Justin Fuente? Shane Beamer hasn't, gotten boxes into his new office in South Carolina yet. Maybe Virginia Tech could make an offer here. Honestly, I think this is for Shane Beamer a much better opportunity. You do not want to be the coach at the place your dad coached at for 25 years or more. I think it was 27 or 28 years, and took to the heights that Frank Beamer took Virginia Tech to. Oh my gosh! I mean, it would be exciting for the fan base to have Beamer ball back in Blacksburg, but the pressure would be so tremendous. I'm not saying that it doesn't eventually happen. I can envision that if Shane Beamer has the success at South Carolina, that certainly South Carolina folk hope he has, Virginia Tech could eventually come calling. And it would be hard for Frank Beamer's son to say no, kind of like it was hard for Roy Williams to say no when Dean Smith said to Roy Williams, "Roy, we need you." If Virginia Tech needs Shane Beamer, I would think that there'd be a inclination on his part to maybe take that job. But I think for him, South Carolina's a great opportunity, and I wish him all the best.
Yeah, there's a warm spot in all of our Hokie hearts for Shane Beamer, for sure. So I wish him well in that new position as well. All right, Chris, for Augusta Free Press, for Street Knowledge, we want to thank you for tuning in today. If you're tuning in later to this podcast and want to read about any of the stories that we talked about, go to our Facebook page. We did link them in our live stream. You can just click on live in that left-hand column, and it'll take you right to our most recent podcast, which would be this one. So feel free to do that so you can read those stories, or just go direct to AugustaFreePress.com for links to all the stories that we discussed. As always, you're welcome to submit questions to us. We appreciate you tuning in, and be sure to tune in again on Tuesday as UVA basketball faces William and Mary. Chris will be live there at John Paul Jones Arena. Game time is 2 p.m., and I'm sure that he will be doing a live blog. Usually you can catch him on Twitter as well, so whichever you prefer. But definitely, Chris, I'm glad to hear that you'll be at that game live, and look forward to that Gonzaga game as well. Even though you won't be there in person, I know it will be an exciting game for UVA fans to be watching. So for all of us here at Augusta Free Press, we hope you have a happy holidays, a Merry Christmas, and we'll be back as it warrants to bring you the latest news. Have a great day.